every day in second grade is ordinary. The children come in at about the same time. I say the same greeting at the door. We study the same subjects, math, science, social studies, reading, writing, the arts, physical education. We eat lunch at the same time in the same place. We play on the same playground with the same classmates. We have a read aloud at the same time. We put our things away in the same places most of the time. And the children go home at the same time. Every ordinary day includes some learning, some forgetting, some tattling, some hugging, some arguing, some listening, some writing, some drawing, some running and some falling, some laughing and some crying. And if I'm honest, the tears are sometimes my own. But every day in second grade is also extraordinary. 7 turning 8-year-olds are learning some things for the very first time. They're also processing what they've learned, what they've observed about the world, and they're making important connections. Tiny eyebrows furrow as the brains behind them churn away to figure out solutions to problems. Their eyes light up as the world opens up to them in big and small ways. They see the joy and the tragedy of being human in this world. I get to see the sparkle in those eyes, and I get to hear the exclamations. The penny sank, but the wood floated? Why? Why would anybody ever say that black children and white children couldn't be in school together? Why did those English people ever think that they could go around the world taking other people's land? English shouldn't have any spelling rules. There's just too many oddballs. Adults make bad choices too sometimes, you know. So if the sun is shining on us right now, and it's dark in Australia, they're probably sleeping. Hey, multiplication is just like addition, but a lot of times. Do you mean the chicken that we eat is the same as the chicken the bird? These miraculous tiny brains are in a stage where they tend to see the world in black and white, good or evil, right or wrong, love or hate. They're working really hard at categorizing the many aspects of life and figuring out what fits where. Part of my role is to help guide students to, as we say at Parkside, do the right thing and treat people right. In that role, I have a lot of power in my classroom. I have a stage and a captive audience, just like today. Don't worry, I mostly use that power for good. In one of my most important and essential speeches, I said, "It's so important to tell the truth, boys and girls. The truth will always come out in the end. And the truth really will set you free. And if you've made a mistake, it's really better to tell the truth about it." I was feeling pretty satisfied with that statement, and I looked around at a room of nodding heads. And then the hand shot up. Now, as a teacher, I know that that hand has the potential to do many things. That hand waving wildly in the air can challenge me, support me, confuse me, impress me, help me, blow me away. There's a lot of power in that hand. And if I thought I had power, I better get ready for the power of a growing mind. Yes, I nod my head, and the power explodes onto the scene. But, Miss Wenger, every time I do something wrong and I tell the truth about it, I get in trouble. And every time I do something wrong and lie about it, I don't get in trouble. Drat! She's gone and discovered that the world is not as black and white as I may have portrayed it. And if she's right, or who am I kidding, since she's right, why do we ever bother to tell the truth about mistakes we've made? Especially if we think we might not be caught. You see, another important part of my job, another important role, is helping students when they find those gray parts of life. And some people might even say all of life is gray. that way. How do we wrestle with paradoxes and hypocrisy and oxymorons, and how do we spell those words too? It's my job to admit to them that adults struggle every day with similar issues and challenges and are not always successful in figuring them out. And I include myself in that group. And I share with them the times that I have dealt with the gray areas in life, the times when I know it's the right thing to walk my dog right after work because she needs the movement and I need the movement and we both need the fresh air, but mostly I just want to sink into the couch and close my eyes. The times when I've lied to a friend and I realize I should tell the truth and mend the pain that I caused. The times when doing the right thing and treating people right means I help someone, but I hurt someone else in the process. There's a cousin of mine who teaches elementary school in a private religious school. And at the beginning of our teaching careers, some 20 years ago, she said to me, "I don't think I could ever teach in a public school. I would feel so inhibited if I couldn't share my faith with my students." At that moment, I really wasn't sure how to respond to that. But after many years guiding students through the black and the white and the gray and the rainbow of life, I know now what I'd say. I'd say, the truth is I do share my faith with my students. It starts with striving to see the face of God in every child I teach. I would love to say this is an easy task. Children are so young and innocent and pure, and it should be easy to see God shining through. But if I'm honest, it's easier for me with some children than with others. And just when I chastise myself for struggling with this, I remember what I tell my students again and again and again. These things that we wrestle with in our classroom are a small but very important example of the things that all of humanity are wrestling with, regardless of our age. That reminds me, because I struggle to see the face of God in adults I meet sometimes, so it really shouldn't surprise me that it's not easy with children either. But it's worth it. Seeing God in their faces means I'll be more open to treating every child with love and acceptance. And that's one way of sharing and practicing my faith with my students. It's true that I don't often speak the name of Jesus in my classroom, but he is there. Jesus brought God's message of love, and love can be everywhere in a second grade classroom. Love is in how we choose to treat each other. Love is in the decisions that we make. Love is in how hard we work and how hard we play. Love is in helping classmates. Love is in our words and actions. Love is in making mistakes and seeing those mistakes not as a failure but as a sign of active learning. Love for self, love for others, love for the world. Unless you think I'm implying that I'm the single source of God's love and Jesus' teachings in my classroom, let me assure you that's not the case. I witness God's love. As a girl comes to me and says, "My friend and I were fighting at recess." I asked her, "Is something wrong? Are you okay?" She told me her mom and dad are fighting. And I told her mine are too. Then we just decided to hug instead. I witness God's love as a boy, without being asked, becomes another child's English-Spanish interpreter, ensuring that the child feels welcome and included. I witnessed it last year when my class decided, after a discussion of how the beginning of a school year can be stressful on children and adults, they decided to write uplifting messages on paper hearts and put them in a plastic bag hanging in the hallway and labeled it with a sign. "Do you have enough love? We have extra. Take some." Every day in second grade this year will be very ordinary. And every day in second grade this year will be extraordinary. And for those of you here today whose lives revolve around the school year, but also for those whose lives don't, I invite you to see the sacred in the ordinary and in the extraordinary moments in your everyday life.
thinking about finding God in the ordinary at the secondary level was not difficult at all. It was one of those moments where it was harder to narrow the focus. And so ultimately, I sat there and I said, if I were to title this message, what would I call it? And I finally came to the idea, Shut Up and Dance With Me. One of my favorite songs. And part of the reason for that, the kids that I work with, day in, day out, are some of the ones that people don't love. Some of the ones that don't get hugs, don't get food, don't know if they have a stable place to live, don't know if they have a place to live, don't know if they have a parent when they go home. And many of you know the same struggles as you work with the same children. And even though I'm the one that's supposed to be teaching them, too often I find they're the ones that teach me. As we were struggling with Aiden's diagnosis over the last several years, one of the boys in my class came up to me, sweet kid. And while a lot of people don't know how to deal with him, he and I have developed a special relationship. I've been his case manager for the last 2 years, and before that I was one of his paraprofessionals. And he came up to me recently before he graduated and said to me, Mr. Smuts, it's okay. I have Asperger's. I made it through. And if you need to cry, I'll be there for you. This is a boy that doesn't touch anyone, doesn't let anyone near him, but he came to me one morning in my room, handed me a piece of paper, and said, here's what I read. Here's what my mom and dad read. Maybe it'll help you. And as I started to cry, he leaned over, put his arm around me, and said, this is okay. You'll be okay. Kids like that are the ones that keep you in the business. Despite all the hardships, through all the paperwork that you really don't want to do, and all the standardized tests that you hate just as much as the kids, that's the reason we stay in the business, is the love that the children give us as well as the love that we give them. Finding God in the ordinary is all around us. But finding the scary at the building that I work in and making it extraordinary, that's where the divine happens. These children that go out after this building and they don't know what they're going to do. They're scared to death. I don't know if I'm going to be able to live on my own. I don't know if I'll go to college. I don't know if I'll get married. I had one boy recently tell me, and Aiden also told me, some girls told me, I'm never going to get a girlfriend. And another boy at school told me the same thing, shortly after Aiden told me that he had heard it. And I had to think about that for a minute. Why does that craving for relationship, why does that craving for need, that acceptance, drive us the way it does? But if we just shut up and listen to what they're saying, we can walk with them. We can join with them. I believe it was St. Francis of Assisi, when asked how to be a great evangelist, was saying to this student, preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words. That's my motto. I'm not going to tell you every last thing in the Bible. I don't feel we need to. Our actions speak far louder than our words ever will. They're not going to care whether or not you say the right thing. They're going to care whether you care. And they'll know. As Christians, that's what we seek to do. We walk out there every day in the midst of turmoil, in the midst of all the horrible news in the morning that we see, in all the bad things we read in the paper. That's what our kids need. They need a shining example. They don't need the right words. They need someone that cares, that loves them. And that is what all of us in this building do. That is what all of us in the community schools, in any building, do. We show we care by serving others. And if you don't care, they'll know. I had the great privilege of coaching the Unified Track and Field team this year. I don't know how many times I cried over the course of the season. I'm not a crier, but it sounds like it when I'm up here talking. Ask my wife. I don't cry for anything, but show me my team, show me some other things, and I'll cry my fool head off. But the thing that sticks with me about my team was the difference they made in other people. A team of no more than 20 students, special ed and general education students. But they made a difference in the building. There were posters put up outside my room cheering them on. There were students going up to them saying, "This is awesome. Run well tonight." There were students all over the building that wanted to know more. How can I help? We have an unfortunate problem that's coming ahead, which is we're going to have too many people to help. And I love that problem. That's a great problem to have. I wish every building in the world had that problem. Too many people that want to help. But the one story that sticks with me is the difference it made in a faculty member. This faculty member just thought it was a PR event. Nothing more, nothing less. The school needed good PR, so we're going to put a bunch of special ed students out there as the face. They came to our first track meet, and within 5 minutes of being there, they said, "How much money do you need? I want to help with everything. I want this to happen. This needs to happen. And more people need to see it." When we had our awards banquet this year for athletic awards, we were given the opportunity to name our own MVPs, to name everything that every other team does, to give varsity letters to special needs students. And the face that was there was amazing. Students that wouldn't otherwise be accepted by their peers at times are given the same varsity letter. And that to me was amazing, to see the smiles, not only on the students' faces, but on the parents' faces and everyone else around them that cheered. It's such an amazing experience to be at one of these events. The stands will stand and cheer. The fans will stand and cheer as people cross the finish line in a 2-minute run that should have taken 30 seconds. They will cheer everyone on, whether it's your team or not. And that's the amazing thing that I love working with these kids. I learn more every day by being with them. And I learn more about what it means to love by being around them. One day in class, my class was having a particularly rough day because of some things going on in a student's life. And I wasn't exactly having a great day either. And so, as I'm wont to do at times, I turned on some music. And my Amazon Prime account started streaming Shut Up and Dance With Me. Which, again, one of my favorite songs. I love that song. And it says, "Don't you dare look back. Keep your eyes on me." I said, "You're holding back." She said, "Shut up and dance with me." That's what my kids were telling me that day. "You're holding back. You're not giving us what we need. We're not giving you what you need either, but you're not giving us what we need. So just shut up and come with us on this." And so there are many times over the course of the year that we just literally would stop and we would dance. I'd turn on the song and we'd start up there and we'd just be dancing and carrying on. When we have our functional skills prom, the kids love to see the teachers come down and dance with them, to be a part of their life. It's such a neat experience. I am just as much a child as they are in many cases. There are many times they say, "Mr. Smuts, you're embarrassing me. Please don't do that." I'm the teacher that likes to dress up on Halloween and make fool of myself. Lucas Kaufman would attest to that. He's been there many times when I've done it. We had a Hawaiian theme day this last year, I think it was. And here I am in my lei and my silly hat and my flip-flops and my shorts, and I'm singing Don Ho songs and things like that, and they're just having all sorts of fun with me. And they're just embarrassed, but they know that's part of life. But they also know they can come to me. I have more kids in my room before school starts than I know what to do with. I love talking to my kids. I may not be the best at filling out paperwork. I may not always be the best teacher, but I'm there when they need it, and they know that. Through pregnancies, STDs, abuse, crushes, broken hearts, hungry stomachs, I've learned to just shut up and dance with them.